From the halls of every school in Michigan, this is School Talks on 760 WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy. Sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Now, take your seats. Class is in session. Here's Robert.
This week on the program, we're looking forward to an exciting event in the city this Tuesday, September 23rd, the Educators Night Out, and we're joined by Anne-Marie Barucki, who leads the charge through the Detroit Cultural Center Association. She's bringing along a passel of guests who are participating in the evening. All this and more coming up. This is School Talks on 760 WJR.
This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Welcome to School Talks. I am your host, Dr. Robert Livernoy, and we have an exciting program for you today that will address and cover lots to do with an event that's coming up this Tuesday, September 23rd. But first, I'd like to introduce our guests, Anne-Marie Barucki from the Detroit Cultural Center Association, who is the Interim Executive Director, and the Director of Research and Collaborative Partnerships from Wayne State University, Julie Osborne. Welcome to the program, ladies.
Thank you for having us.
Great to be here.
So, coming up this Tuesday, if you're an educator listening to this program today, you're going to want to pay close attention to all of the opportunities that are in front of us at this event coming up Tuesday. And I think a really good place to start would be, Anne-Marie, can you tell us a bit about the event and what it means to educators and really all the cultural institutions in the city?
So, Educators Night is an open house that is targeted towards K through 12 educators, curriculum directors, school administrators, parents who homeschool, to teach them about all the resources that are available to them in Detroit's cultural center institutions. So that night, we will have six different venues open: the Charles H. Wright Museum of African American History, the Michigan Science Center, the Detroit Institute of Arts, the Detroit Historical Museum, and Wayne State University's Welcome Center will be open. In addition, we have also over 50 different nonprofit organizations from all across Metro Detroit that we've invited that will be spread out at these different institutions, sharing, you know, all of the best resources that they have that are available for free to teachers. People can learn about what the latest field trip opportunities are. In some instances, curriculum can be shared. But it's also an opportunity, though, for our cultural center institutions to showcase the best of their galleries at the museums, to showcase their expertise in education. There will be a number of hands-on experiences, lectures, and just a really great way to just hear directly from these institutions how they can best serve K through 12 students throughout the Metro Detroit area.
And I'm sure you would agree that one of the things this does for educators is it inspires them, given the amount of resources that you point to. So, Julie, in what ways does Wayne State University's presence at this event, do you think, sort of helps the process?
So Wayne State University has been partnering with this event for the last 3 years. A number of different departments from across campus participate, like from our College of Fine Performing Communication Arts, our College of Engineering. And so last year was the first year that the College of Education came on board as well. We're really happy to be partnering in Educators Night. We strongly believe that education is not contained to a classroom or a school building. And the community is really a beautiful place, especially the cultural community in Detroit, is a place for lifelong learning and exposing young people and their families and their teachers to all the centers of excellence while in school is a way to foster their love of the arts and culture, their pride in the community of what Detroit contributes to the region and the world. And it's just a place to have fun and connect. And so Wayne State University offers a number of different ways to connect, yes, to our academic programs, but also to learn about some of the curricular approaches and some of the arts and other ways that we can engage with schools outside the classroom.
You know, as an extension of that, Anne-Marie, could you describe how the cultural center planning of this really supports the next generation of learners? Because it really is at the the end of the day about educating children and creating opportunities for educators. So how do you see that process reaching the next generation?
So 8 years ago, all of our institutions, which is in a targeted area in Detroit, located in the heart of Midtown, and leaders in philanthropy, also along with State of Michigan, the City of Detroit, and Wayne County leaders, developed a master plan for the Cultural Center in order to make it a much more accessible, welcoming, vibrant area. And with that, there is the plan to try to redo the area physically, but also the will to get the institutions to work together more and collaborate, whether on marketing or on programming. And one of the things that we knew is that a lot of our institutions didn't know what the other institutions offered. And so by bringing everyone together under the umbrella of Educators Night, it's a way for everyone to kind of learn what the others are offering. It kind of has incited some new partnerships as well. We're hoping down the road to develop new co-curriculum across the institutions. But at the same time, it's a way to get teachers to think about this district that it's walkable. A lot of people come, and they come to one destination, oftentimes the Detroit Institute of Arts or the Michigan Science Center, and they have no idea that across the street the Detroit Public Library is,
right,
or the Detroit Historical Museum is kitty corner from the DIA. And until you walk it, you don't know.
Right.
And so a lot of people come and they spend time at just one institution when you really could come and spend time at multiple institutions. And so we're trying to change the way that people think about this area. And because we know the wealth of resources that are there, so we're trying to help market that. Educators Night is just one way we're doing that right now, and hopefully down the road we're going to do more together. But it's a great gateway event for teachers who haven't been to the Cultural Center in years.
You know, from a resource perspective, I'd like your input from both of you on this one, I think, critical observation that you make given the proximity of things. From, let's say, an advanced doctoral student at the university, and for, say, a K-12 student on a field trip, Julie, how do you see this cultural hub as an opportunity for advanced doctoral students at the university?
Community connectedness is one of our core values, and we're actively seeking opportunities for our students to engage with the community. We want them to leave our program not just with the content knowledge, but also with the leadership skills to take those and put those to use on behalf of their students or whomever they're working with, as we train more than just educators in our college. We're really looking for opportunities to broaden and leverage resources, so we want to be part of that connectedness. And I think that's something that us just being involved in Educators Night has actually connected the College of Education with the education providers and the other in the cultural institutions that are partners. And we realize that you might come through our program to work in the field of education. And again, that is not limited to just classrooms. There are educators that work in the cultural institutions and much more broadly. So there's a lot of opportunities for that.
And on the other side, Anne-Marie, how do you feel a K-12 student could benefit from this hub as well?
Well, I think that sometimes it's just getting out of the classroom and getting to a museum or to a place like the Detroit Public Library where the architecture is amazing and awe-inspiring. Mm-hmm. I think it can help children think bigger about their own futures. I also think that arts and culture is a true equalizer. You know, I grew up from a family that wasn't super wealthy, but, you know, we made it by. But being involved in arts and culture, you really learn critical, creative thinking that opens up the door for you to think bigger about your future. And I think it's really kind of the gateway too for teaching collaboration, innovation. And for those kids who come up, they don't have means like everyone else, going to these free institutions to be able to learn about different things, I think it's really a great benefit to their education.
Anne-Marie Barucki from the Detroit Cultural Center Association and Julie Osborne from Wayne State University. I'm excited this Tuesday, September 23rd, for the Educators Night Out. Thanks for stopping by School Talks. When we come back right after this, we'll continue our conversation with Kimmy Dobos-Wolf from the Detroit Historical Museum and Bernadette McAllister from the Detroit Public Library. This is School Talks on 760 WJR.
This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernois, sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point. Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Once again at the head of the class, Dr. Livernoy.
Welcome back to School Talks. We're continuing our conversation with the Cultural Hub of Detroit and the Educators Night Out coming this Tuesday, September 23rd. Joining us in studio is Kimmy Dobos-Wolf from the Detroit Historical Museum and Bernadette McAllister from the Detroit Public Library. Welcome to the program, ladies.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
So as a participant in this really exciting event, I want to hear what the Detroit Public Library has. I've known for a long time, being a student at Wayne State myself, but share with our School Talks listeners, what makes the library stand out as a resource for early childhood learning and maybe even lifelong learning?
We stand out because we offer so many different resources, both in print as well as our online resources, but we also offer a lot of opportunities for families to come in and to meet other people in their communities. We provide a lot of story times for those early literacy families, and we also provide materials that they can take home with them that vary. So they can take home books, they can take home audio types of materials, but we also have things like nature backpacks where parents can come and check out and learn about nature.
Mm-hmm. Kimmy, from the historical museum perspective, how does it help engage K-12 students with, I understand you have hands-on learning things there and opportunities for them. Share with us a bit about what that means to them.
Yeah, so when students visit us, they can see a lot of different fantastic galleries, but also, like a lot of museums, we do have elements like touch screens that allow them to dive deeper into different subjects, buttons that help make our model trains run, but also when they're here on a tour with us, they might experience something like touching a beaver fur or being led through an inquiry-based discussion. So, for example, we have a model of the first car ever made in Detroit, and we have students do an exercise where they examine what looks different on that car versus the cars that we have today. And then we brainstorm with them what we could do if we wanted to make the most amazing car in the future. So we really take some time to engage the students with activities while they're with us. But if they're there on their own with their families or just on a self-led tour with their teachers, there's plenty for them to do in the galleries to explore and learn together.
In doing research for this particular show today, I learned that the museum has a pretty neat and distinguished designation to support children with autism at the museum. Could you share with us, obviously given the prevalence of it in our society, how that works at the museum?
Yeah, so we are an IBSES accredited museum, which means that we have gone through the process of, you know, having every single staff member be trained in this so that we can welcome guests who are on the spectrum or, you know, might just need a special assistance while they're with us in the museum. So that affects, you know, that training affects every step of our process from the planning of events to what our galleries look like. So we have sensory guides so that people can understand what they might experience when they go into a gallery, whether it might be some lighting that is a little bit different or if there's some loud noises. And then we also promote the sensory bags that we have, which are available for both youth and adults. And we are also working on building a sensory room so that people can join us at the museum. And this is all about visitor experience. We want people to feel like they can come to our museum, they can be comfortable while they're with us, and that they can have a great time as a family or as a class.
So as part of the larger cultural planning initiative of this entire event, I'd like to know how each of your organizations supports the idea of access and equity in its alignment with the mission of the initiative. So Bernadette, at the library, what kinds of things do you do to support that?
Well, we're open to the public. We're free. It's free to obtain a library card. And we provide lots of materials that families can check out for free. And we've also made it so that if you're a little late on getting your items back, we're not charging you late fees. So it's just a resource where families don't have to worry about walking through the door, and it's something that they have to pay for. We also provide lots of different programs. Our programs are educational as well as just fun opportunities for families to participate in. And not just for our children, but we also have different programs for our teens as well. At our main library, we have a department that's specifically for our teens. We have our teen center. It has a free podcast and music studio there for them where they can take part in.
You're speaking my language, a music studio. I like that. Kimmy, at the museum, your support for autism is certainly an important one. Any other ways that you support equity and access at the museum for people?
Oh, yeah. So we have a special membership called a Detroiter membership, which invites people who live in the cities of Detroit, Highland Park, or Hamtramck to our museum with a free membership. So that is available to any family who lives within those cities. And this is a way for us to help encourage people to join us at our museum. We want them to come as a family to experience it and to want to come back and join us for all the great programs that we offer. But also for students and teachers who are visiting, we work with different partners to have funding so that we can support field trips. So we do have funds where we can help cover the cost of buses for students. And we also have other programs that we offer to help make sure that students who want to visit us are able to so that it's affordable for them.
From both of your institutions, you continue to reinforce for me something I've known for quite a long time, and that is when you come down to the city, whether it's to any one of the cultural institutions or other places, the city is so rich with opportunity that for many people who come down maybe for a Tiger game, they drive by so much history and resource that, you know, although it might not be right in front of them, it is there and available to them. And the way you've sort of framed what you offer at the library and the museum is incredibly important. And as far as the Educator Night this Tuesday, obviously the library will be open, the museum will be open, I think about how important that is to inspire educators. If you leave with nothing more than great ideas for your classroom, I think that's a win all the way around. So I want to thank you so much for joining us here on School Talks. Kimmy Dobos-Wolf from the Detroit Historical Museum and Bernadette McAllister from the Detroit Public Library. I'll definitely see you both on Tuesday night and appreciate you stopping by School Talks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Welcome back to School Talks. We're continuing our conversation with the cultural organizations who are part of Educator Night, which will be this Tuesday, September 23rd, here down in the city. And joining us from the Charles H. Wright Museum of African American History is Yolanda Jack, and from the Detroit Institute of Arts, Tyler Taylor. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Robert.
So I appreciate you stopping by the program and giving us an opportunity to hear about all the great things your organizations offer. Especially as part of this really neat thing coming up this Tuesday. I'd like to start with you, Yolanda. Could you give us a good sense of what the Wright Museum does and ways it helps students connect to especially history and their lives?
Oh, yes. There's a lot of different things. Of course, we have the students coming through the museum doing the tours of our exhibitions, notably the main exhibition, And Still We Rise. That's where we see most of the children coming through. But of course, Luminosity and the other exhibitions. And of course, we have yearly or annual programming like Camp Africa, where the young people spend their summer times visiting the museum and as well as learning about their history and culture. So it's a lot of fun.
So if you had to pick one, what do you think is probably most impactful to young people when they visit the museum?
If
you had to pick one.
So I think because the main, when people come to the museum, the main exhibition is the most impactful. Folks would think I'd say the tour, but I think the Camp Africa program, because we've got kids, I've seen young people who've come through over a decade ago, and they still remember their experiences. So I think that time, that concentrated time in the building, in the exhibitions, learning about that, and then also experiencing with the campers as well, you know, so it's just a lot of fun.
And at the DIA, Tyler, what would you say are some of the more impactful things that students take away once they visit the Institute?
Yeah, it would be difficult to pin down just one. We're kind of in the same boat there, but we offer special one-off programs throughout the year. Like on the immediate horizon, we're going to be bringing students into the Detroit Film Theater to see a special presentation of the 1922 film Nosferatu, and we'll have a live score from the Detroit Bureau of Sound. And then we have a special exhibition coming up called Contemporary Anishinaabe Art, a Continuation. And for that, we'll be offering some special student programs where we'll bring students in one day on Indigenous Peoples Day, actually. They'll get to meet the author, Angeline Booley. They'll get a free copy of her book. They'll do some art making and see the exhibition. But I'd say the core would really be our free field trip program, where we have a whole host of tour topics that teachers can select from to come and make connections to the classroom. And when I was working with students in the galleries, the most, I'll say, gratifying experience where I'd see the most resonance would be just touring the students, most of whom are coming for the first time, and they'd look at me and say, I think I'm going to be an artist, as if they had never considered it before. And that's as good as it gets as a museum educator. And I think that's where we really see the resonance with students.
You know, you mentioned the word free, and I think it's worth reinforcing that the admission is free for Tri-County residents.
That's correct. Yeah. So it's free for Tri-County residents, and all the field trips are free for schools in Wayne, Oakland, and Macomb County. And that includes buses, by the way. I want to emphasize that because that's a big obstacle for a lot of teachers and schools, but we will send the buses, and we'll reimburse you if you have to use your own.
Yep. As superintendent of Warren Consolidated Schools for a long, long time, we were regular participants in those trips there and at the Detroit Zoo in a very similar fashion. And I've known, and I think we all know, that visiting a museum or an institute like this once, sort of a one and done, is one thing. But when you have the opportunity to return is where you really start to take in all that it means. And really, there's nothing, I think, cooler than coming upon a young student who's just mesmerized by something there without having to have a teacher or someone tell them about it. And the places are just full of that, both of them. So let me ask, Yolanda, what innovative steps has the Wright Museum done in terms of helping people understand climate justice and the whole sustainability discussion that's happening in our culture?
We're very proud of the work of Leslie Tom, our Chief Sustainability Officer. She's done a great deal of work within the museum and has really extended her leadership outside of the museum in terms of branching out the Detroit studio design, I think, I don't know the proper name of it, but that activity, they'll be participating in the Green Town Hall on September 25th, and people can come in and register, learn about what's going on inside the museum, but also how leadership at the museum is taking effect outside, how we're looking for ways to really extend and show and be an example of how institutions and organizations can be leaders within sustainability and can have sustainable practices within their institutions, within their walls, but also reach out to those who might need support in that way as well.
You know, I'd like your perspective from each of you on this one, I think, really important topic as it relates to raising children. You know, in this day and age, I hate to use that term, it's pretty challenging to raise children given all the social and external forces. And I'm curious, we'll start with you, Tyler. At the DIA, how do you think visiting the Institute helps contribute to resilience in children beyond physical spaces and how that gives them an opportunity to take things away that helps them reinforce their, you know, their role or their place in society?
Yeah, so I think institutions like the DIA, the Wright, and all the organizations participating in Educators Night are really part of the essential infrastructure if we're talking about building pride and resilient communities. For example, if students walk into the DIA, we can really introduce them to greatness on like a local and a global scale. They can walk into Rivera Court and be surrounded by Diego Rivera's Detroit industry murals, and now they're seeing their city, right? The hands, the sweat of their city, in many cases, their own families elevated onto this world-class stage and validated. And they can learn about other artists who have overcome adversity, both personal and social, to like make great achievements. And that's part of the message we get to send, that this legacy of greatness and excellence and resilience, it's a part of their own story and history. And it's great to see that influence in person.
How about you, Yolanda, at the museum? How does it give students that same opportunity?
Well, like Tyler said, it's really an opportunity to get people to understand their place in history. Young people may not always think about the past as a continuum of time or a way to that they are part of a thing that's gone on for a long time. But when you put them and help them understand their place in this continuum and how these people who have gone before them have done these things and how they're connected to them, they're interested in this thing, or they love sports, or they have this passion for writing or science. Oh, me too. I like that. Mm-hmm. And I can do some innovative thing. And maybe I can follow this path. And you see the work that has done that is not just a local thing, but something that has been impactful globally. You can appreciate that you have this opportunity to step into some big shoes, or to at least to take up the mantle for yourself. And that's something that's powerful. And young people need that to understand their role in society.
Yolanda Jack from the Charles H. Wright Museum of African American History and Tyler Taylor from the Detroit Institute of Arts, two really important participants in the big event this Tuesday, September 23rd. I want to thank you for stopping by School Talks and being part of some important work.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
Coming up after the break, we'll be joined by Dr. Christian Greer from the Michigan Science Center, and we'll again chat with Anne-Marie Barucki from the Detroit Cultural Center and sort of wrap our arms around what is going to be a great night this Tuesday. This is School Talks on 760 WJR.
School Talks on WJR is sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Now let's get back to class. Once again, your host, former Superintendent Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Welcome back to School Talks. We're joined now by Dr. Christian Greer, the president and CEO of the Michigan Science Center. And rejoining us is Anne-Marie Barucki from the Detroit Cultural Center Association, talking about the big event this Tuesday, September 23rd, which is the Educators Night Out. And as a participant of one of the organizations in the event, Dr. Greer, I'd like to know, I did some research for this particular show, and I'm curious if you could share with our listeners what impact did the Michigan's Science Center, the Aramco Traveling Science Program, have on students and sort of education at large this past year?
Well, our partnership with Aramco goes way back to 2020. As a matter of fact, when we were trying to reopen the cultural district and the Science Center, we reached out to Aramco to try to see if they could help support our opening. And they actually granted us a big grant to reopen, which was rare for science centers. So this partnership has continued, and we've done quite a few things specifically around outreach, because their interest is trying to connect students that can't come to the science center to the science center. And the way they do that is by funding traveling science. So some people have probably seen our van traveling around the city or across the state. We've been to probably 92% of all the counties across the state, and Aramco funds that activities. We're actually starting a new program on dissection. We do squid dissection and fish dissections as well. So it's allowed a biology content to enter with some of the things we normally do with chemistry and physics. So it's a wonderful program. We saw 58,000 people last year in the state of Michigan through the Aramco Traveling Science Program. So it's a fun thing.
That's like in my childhood, the bookmobile would come by
your
neighborhood.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, same type of thing.
Yeah, this is the bookmobile on steroids.
Right, or a STEM ice cream truck. That kind of thing.
That's the real deal. You know, I'm going to set a note on this program. I talk to school districts all over the state, and I'm going to reach out to some of them to see if they've had contact with you.
Oh, that would be awesome. We'd love to come back. We have new programs, and because we're opening our new planetarium, it'll be testing this fall and probably opening next year. We have a very, very, very high-tech planetarium coming with 8K projection systems, nanoseam dome, 5.1 sound, mm-hmm. lots of cool stuff. And we have a portable planetarium that we can take anywhere in the state. As a matter of fact, we took it up to the UP this year on our UP trip, so it was great. We'd love to do more of that.
Yeah, Las Vegas may have the sphere, but we're going to have the planetarium.
For a lot less cost.
Just a follow-up on that. Does the planetarium, are you using existing space that was in the Science Center?
Correct. Yes, the planetarium was part of an expansion that happened around 2001. It was built just more towards the Warren side of the Science Center. And it's in a cylinder. You'll see it on the corner. corner of Warren and John R. And so it's built in that. We've been doing some work on the roof, and then the dome is actually being put in right now as we speak. So we're excited about that.
So for Educators Night, what can an educator expect coming to the Science Center?
Well, one of the things that I think is great is this event is free. And we're hoping to, like all the organizations that are on the or in the district, to try to make the cultural district more accessible, more interesting, more. And in our case, we want to bring their STEM curricula to life. You know, impressions and experiences for young people are so important. These are the things you remember throughout your entire career. For me, I studied physics in college, and there were times in which I took some very challenging exams where there's only two or three people in the class on a high-level topic. And, you know, you hearken back to that time in which you really first started to be interested in science. And this is the kind of thing that we think if teachers get firsthand knowledge and connections, it makes the field trip a lot easier, and they know how to sort of decipher what's going on. So we're hoping to bring the curriculum and the standards to life through these experiences that we have at the Science Center.
You know, the only time as a kid I remember not being able to sleep at night was Christmas Eve.
Yes.
And the day I learned that the Bernoulli principle is what makes airplanes fly.
Oh, okay.
Right?
You know, I was thinking you were going to say the first day of school. But
No. And that, you know, as someone who studied language my whole career and my studies in linguistics and that,
yeah.
And I went through some basic science and that, but the day I learned about the Bernoulli principle, and also it makes a curveball curve.
Well, you know, that's an interesting thing you bring up because I was just flying this week out to California for a Science Center conference. And I was sitting near the wing, and I was watching the spoilers and the flaps and the thrust reversers and all the stuff happening. And you forget that the wing is a machine. You know, it controls the airflow over the top and the bottom,
yeah.
And this creates lift. And that lift is controlled by a pilot or automatically by a computer. And when you see this, you forget just, like, this big thing that weighs all this. How could it go up in the air?
Right.
But that's physics. That's science. The things that we know about our universe, how we apply it, is engineering. The technology is what's built. And I think it changes our culture. In our society, and these are the kinds of things that are really interesting. In San Francisco, they have these Waymo cars, and these are self-driving vehicles that you can mm-hmm. you can hail a Waymo and travel somewhere, and the wheel is turning, and the brakes are being depressed, and there's no one in it except for you. And so it's a really interesting thing to see, and we want our kids to be the ones to, in Detroit and in Michigan, to design the next generation of those vehicles.
Yeah, you know, I have a nephew who has a PhD in physics yeah. from UCal Berkeley.
Oh, wow, it's a great school.
Oh, and he
just out that way.
He works for General Motors' driverless vehicle program. Mm-hmm. And I asked him one time, I said, Greg, tell me how it works. And he says, oh, Uncle Bob, you're just not going to get it. I go, well, is it more than carrying the one? He goes, yeah, a little bit.
A little bit more than that.
Yeah, so, but I, as a follow-up, I understand that the center is also a Smithsonian affiliate.
Correct, yes.
Tell us a bit about that and what resources that also provides local learners.
Well, I think being a Smithsonian affiliate is a great thing because this is the largest museum system in the world. There are over 200 affiliates that are across the country and maybe even in a couple territories. But it's a wonderful thing to be able to connect with other researchers and educators and exhibit designers and collection specialists that care for the nation's most precious objects. And so for us to be a Smithsonian affiliate here in Detroit, we have an opportunity to bring that here. As a matter of fact, our inspiration for our hyperspace project or initiative, which is to redo the planetarium and add new exhibits, really came from my travels to the Air and Space Museum. Although we don't have the resources to build something that elaborate or have the artifacts, we are hoping to give everyone who visits the Science Center a taste of the Air and Space Museum. They also provide different activities with our invention program associated with the Spark Lab and the Lemelson Center, which is in D.C., part of the Smithsonian Network. And we're hoping to bring that here in October for a free day. So it's just a wonderful way for people in Detroit and Michigan to feel like they're not being left out. We are a platform. We have 11 partners for this Educator Night that are coming in, mm-hmm. including the Henry Ford, Detroit Zoo, Cranbrook, Ann Arbor Hands-On Museum. So we're trying to be a platform, and that's what's so great about being a part of the cultural district. We want it to be a center. You come here, you get connected to all these things, and for teachers, I think it's an incredible value.
You know, the best way I can frame it is when you go to a shopping mall, for those that are still left, some of them have a food court.
Yes.
So you walk in, and there's seven or eight things
exactly.
you can eat from all over the world.
Right.
We want this cultural hub to be that same thing.
I think you hit the nail on the head, and we're hoping that the Michigan Science Center is that appetizer sampler plate for STEM.
Fantastic. I will say this, because it's sort of related to the whole curiosity of science. I read recently that the Voyager 1 that left Earth 48 years ago, and wherever it is now in space, has traveled I don't know how many millions of miles, and it has still not yet reached one light day away in terms of time measurement. And you hear light years. It hasn't even traveled one light day, let alone a light year. And it's been 48 years. And I think about the curiosity of the universe and how that can spur children into learning about things. Just one more, you know. The
Bernoulli, the vastness of space is almost incalculable. And, you know, you think about how fast light travels, 186,000 miles per hour, and it's 8 minutes from the sun, the surface of the sun, the photosphere, for, you know, a photon to get to the planet Earth and into your eye. You know, it's almost a billion miles to Saturn, almost four out to Pluto's orbit, and the heliopause, which is where the Voyager 1 spacecraft is now, is way out there, and that's not even close to the nearest star, which was four light years away. So it's unbelievably vast, and I think the imaginations of our young people are probably the only folks that can really conceive of something that big, and so getting them exposure to this is critical.
100%. So, Anne-Marie, just to close this really great show today, I wanted to give you a chance to help our listeners understand how this Cultural Center Planning Initiative sort of positions the district to become a national model. Tell us a bit about that.
So, we've been working for the last 8 years with our 12 cultural center partners. And, you know, we've developed a master plan that we're now working on our first phase of capital improvement. At the same time, we've been investing money with our partner, Wayne State University, to install free public Wi-Fi throughout the Cultural Center. So that will be available on Educators Night. But we're trying to make this area a much more accessible, welcoming environment for all people. And with the CCPI work that we're doing, it's also helping us create new partnerships amongst all of these institutions. I think we all know right now that we're in a time where it is financially tight, and a lot of our institutions are, you know, working together in really creative ways to still continue to deliver on their missions to provide to the citizens of Southeast Michigan the best arts, cultural, design, and educational experiences. So this really is an opportunity for teachers to come out and experience the best of that and to get the help that they need in the classroom. So this is all happening under this umbrella of the Cultural Center Planning Initiative. And we hope that people will come out and support this area.
Dr. Christian Greer from the Michigan Science Center and Anne-Marie Barucki from the Detroit Cultural Center Association, thanks for stopping by School Talks for a great conversation. I'll see all of you Tuesday night down at Educators Night. So thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's all the time we have for today, but I want to remember, if you're an educator in the city of Detroit, this Tuesday night, September 23rd, is Educators Night Out. I encourage you to stop down and see all the great things that our cultural institutions have to offer. For now, just remember, there's two ways to spell one and three ways to spell two. Until next time, this has been School Talks on 760 WJR.